Hey everybody, it's Gaming My Whole Life here, and by that I mean it's actually George at Gaming My Whole Life. Today I have Jamel with me. How are you doing, my friend?
I am doing good. It's been so long since we've been on a podcast together. I was starting to get the shakes, you know. I was having a withdrawal from being on a podcast with you, so it's been great. Now I'm great. Now that I'm back with you.
Awesome. I did have to carry things last episode, and I was worried I spoke a bit too much. But that being said, when it's a podcast, if you're not talking, there's just silence.
That is a problem, isn't it? It's like, if I don't say stuff, who's going to say stuff?
Exactly. That is literally the dilemma I had. It's like, all right, it can be a little bit of a challenge to just listen to one person just go on and on. And I'm like, yeah, but when you're one person, that's what you got to do.
Yeah.
you go with it. So, yeah, everyone, welcome to the Gaming My Whole Life podcast, where we talk games, follow the industry, and geek out from pixels to now.
Pixels to now. And I love it.
Yeah, I'm quite proud of that new slogan. I am sticking to it. You know it's official because it's on the Facebook page.
Oh, damn, guys. All I have to everyone look at Positive Gaming Space. Come on, guys. Like, subscribe. Not only the podcast, but join Positive Gaming Space. We're here to talk to you.
We are, or to each other, or someone. Yes. Talking needs to be done. But distractions aside, I pointed this out during the last recording, the one I did solo, and that is I was patiently waiting for you, Jamel, because I really wanted to discuss Microsoft's E3 conference, because I feel we're both in the same boat. We were both pleasantly surprised with what we saw. Am I correct in that assumption? Did you like or were surprised by what you saw at this year's E3?
This year's E3, Microsoft's E3, Xbox, the Xbox presentation of E3 really shocked me in a good way. You know that kind of pleasant surprise where you're like, oh, I'm just walking into like this average place and oh my God, this is really nice. I had like zero expectations coming into this and you're giving me all this good stuff. Like this is nice. But a surprise, which
yeah,
I probably could have covered by just saying I was surprised by how good it was, but I feel like they didn't communicate what I was feeling enough, so I hope I've painted a vivid enough picture for you guys. It was surprising, but in a good way.
I feel exactly the same. We've discussed Microsoft plenty of times on this podcast because they are naturally one of the big three, being Microsoft, Sony, and Nintendo. And the one complaint which we've always given to Microsoft, and we haven't been shy about this at all, is that they don't really make it that much about the games. We hear them talk about hardware a lot. We know they have the most powerful gaming console and, you know, good on them for having that. But the one argument which many gamers have, and that includes ourselves, is like, hey, what exclusives do you have? Because exclusive sell consoles, they're the reason why you commit and go make that purchase. And Microsoft in the past as well has shot themselves in the foot a lot because whenever they happen to release a game that maybe you might be interested in, then you could probably just get it on PC, which I know that's Microsoft, but it makes buying the Xbox console redundant.
Yeah.
Because it's like, all right, I already have a PC. I can get the PC version, which by default will have better graphics and will be cheaper because it's PC. Yeah. So it's like, what's going on? But back to the Microsoft E3 conference, I'll let you take the lead. What happened?
Okay. So they came out with a lot of crazy good-looking games, not just Microsoft games, you know, because they had some Square properties, they had some Capcom stuff in there. It feels like they went to a bunch of game companies and said, here, take my money, let me show you awesome games, we're going to put on a good show. And there was a lot of attention put towards, we are going to wow people, we are going to put on a bloody great show, and they are going to be talking about our brand. So Microsoft, they're going to be talking about our platform, Xbox. People are going to leave this E3 going, oh wow, Microsoft have listened to us and put on some great stuff. Like, for example, they after they showed this amazing-looking Halo trailer, which looked great. I mean, did you see that?
I did, yeah.
And that game looks pretty. And I'm not normally someone to get caught up in graphics or how a game looks and all that kind of thing, but that game looked like... It looked like a tech demo, but it also gave you an indication of, hey, this is the environment you're going to be playing in. This is the kind of stuff you're going to see, which I'm not normally one for a Halo game. And, you know, normally you're running around as a dude in green shooting aliens, but this is, it's given me something to think about, which I don't normally do with regards to Halo. They showed Devil May Cry 5. That was announced, I'm pretty sure, in the Xbox show.
Yeah, it was very exciting.
Very exciting. And they also showed off some other cool stuff, like Battletoads, which had me jumping out of my seat.
How much of a surprise was that? Oh. Like, I was not expecting them to say Battletoads. Like, it's the year 2018, and Battletoads came on the screen. They didn't show any gameplay. Hmm. They didn't show any footage. They didn't show a screenshot. They didn't have to. They just needed the logo. And I liked the tone that set. Because when I saw that, it's like, right, everything's up for grabs. Huh. Microsoft is looking into gaming so much at the moment that they'll even revive an old relic like that.
Yeah. It, you know what it is? It makes you think that they have all these properties under their umbrella and they care about. And the second we saw that, the whole internet just jumped out of its seat. It was great. I was also curious about your thoughts of when they, after the Halo trailer, they showed this little, this kind of taglines or advertised a few things. Like, they said 50 games, 18 exclusives, 15 world premieres. What did you feel from seeing that? I'm sorry.
I was pretty taken aback. Like, when they showed that, I'm thinking, right, you have a lot to deliver now. You've set yourself up. You haven't said we have a lot to show you. You haven't used the words a lot. You've used specific numbers. And in the land of the internet, you don't use numbers because they're very specific and can be used against you. Especially from, as we mentioned just a moment ago, a company who historically didn't really show you much games. It's very rare you saw any exclusives. And lately, whenever they've gotten their hands on exclusives, they've forced the developers to rush it out the door a little bit too early. And then they've undervalued their own original IP, which is a shame. It's like that State of Decay game, the one with the zombies. A lot of people really like it. People like the first one, and people have been really complimentary towards the second one, saying it's fun, it has a lot of potential when it works, and that's not often. A lot have described it as a game which it's still an alpha. Like, there's game baking.
Let's make some cookies, George.
There's game breaking bugs in there. And if I was a developer, I'd be really upset about it. Like, imagine you're working really hard on a game and you know mentally, like, all right, I need another 6 or 7 months, but this is going to be awesome. Mm. And then your big boss, Microsoft, is like, nope, it's coming out. And you're like, well, I'm not ready. And they're like, look, the industry is giving us a hard time. Everyone is making fun of us because of the fact we don't have exclusives. This is an exclusive. We'll patch it later. Come on. And then bring it out.
That would suck.
And you have to stand by your broken product saying it has glimmers of brilliant because brilliant is what the whole package was going to be. But here it is, which is, you know, one of the dangers of working under a publisher. But most studios can't afford to not have a publisher because that's what they do. They publish, they market it, they spend all that money, including spending the money that the developers get paid to do.
Yeah, and that would have really dramatic impact on your brand. If you're a developer and the publisher just basically rushes you out the door and people associate your brand, if you're a developer, with... you know, inferior quality, you know, not enough development time, all that kind of stuff. That could sink you in terms of your reputation. That could cost you $1 million a game. You know, that could...
Oh, easily. And it's like Sea of Thieves that came out. That was made by Rare Studios. Mm. And they're a very old... very well-known studio that is very capable. And they clearly released a game before it was ready. Now, putting these couple, literally there's just two of them, these couple exclusives aside, so we were biased before watching the Microsoft E3. And we were pleasantly surprised. I mean, the whole thing about games, they revealed exclusives, several exclusives. They revealed big plans that Microsoft has gone ahead and done to ensure the production of future products. So, for example, Microsoft revealed that they've bought out several, they bought out five developers to work under their umbrella, which is a big deal because the one thing which I've always thought is Microsoft has a lot of money. You have money that you can throw around to get results. And if you don't have the talent working under you to make the fantastic games that appear under Sony, that appear under Nintendo, then go and buy whichever developers have the talent. Like, go to already established studios. Like, right, you're good. We want that good. Work for us. We'll pay for you to make the next game. Just do a brilliant job of it. And they've done that. They've gone ahead and bought five studios, and one of them being Ninja Theory, which that really surprised me because Ninja Theory, to refresh some people's memories, they've done a number of games, but the most recent ones was Devil May Cry 5, the reboot, where Dante looked different, which granted he looked different and a lot of fans backlashed against that, but anyone who was willing to look past the new exterior and play the game realized that it was one of his greatest entries. It was a great game. And recently they did Hellblade, which was a very unique project where you controlled a female character who suffered from schizophrenia. And the game wasn't trying so hard to be fun as it was trying to be honest to what schizophrenia sufferers actually see. Because we know it literally melts the mind away and you see things that aren't even there and it's really hard to understand.
Yeah, for sure.
And so they took on that project knowing that they may not profit from it. Turns out they did, and it's visually a masterpiece. And yeah, sorry, you were going to say something?
Oh, if you haven't played Hellblade, from what I understand, it's you play as a Viking woman. And you have to, you basically get attacked by your nightmares. And it is a really visually stunning game, like you were saying. I haven't played it myself, but I've watched it being played for half an hour. And, oh my god, that game is evocative, it's very moody, and it's genuinely terrifying. Like, the idea of actually going through that in your own life must just be hell. So, like, that whole premise is something that I find really interesting. It's like how we were talking about, like, 10 or so episodes ago about the Assassin's Creed game, where you go through the ancient, like, the recreation of a city from several, like, 1,000 or so, or 2,000 years ago, or something like that. I can't remember what the name of the city was.
Yep.
But yeah, it's that whole idea of gaming not just being a gameplay experience, but also showing you stuff that I find really interesting because it's a great way to engage the audience. And if Microsoft have that kind of talent pumping out games for them, then we may be in for a real treat in the lifetime of the Xbox.
Exactly, yeah. And one thing which a lot of companies do, and Sony and Microsoft would definitely be doing this, is they would have already, quite a while ago, started working towards their next console successor. And what many, including myself, believe has happened here is any good game takes several years. If you're lucky and you know exactly what you're doing, maybe you have a good game in 2 years. But most likely, 3 or 4. Now, with Microsoft having acquired five studios. I'm thinking that the ship has already sailed with the Xbox One and they're looking to the future. And I think it's a lot easier to brand a new entry than it is to fix the sinking ship.
Makes sense.
Now, the Xbox One X and the Xbox One, they're great consoles, but word of mouth, and it's been this way long enough that most people just refer to the console without the games. Great online support, best online space, that's what most of the fans are there for, but none of the exclusives. I think Microsoft is going to attempt to do what Nintendo did with the Switch. The Wii U was a sinking ship. The system was capable, could do good graphics, this and that, but they stuffed up the marketing. They weren't getting anywhere. A lot of people didn't even know it was a new console. They thought it was an add-on. And while I buried my head in the sand, and I'm like, no, I actually didn't want the Switch. I wanted them to fix what they could with the Wii U. But Nintendo were the wiser ones here and did a fresh start and launched with a must-have game and Breath of the Wild Zelda. And I think Microsoft can do the same. I think Microsoft, when they release their next console, can come out fist swinging with, because these five development studios, imagine they're all of them working on the next Xbox system. And when they launch, they have a must-have game from day one. And then every 6 months after that, another game, another. I think that's a better investment than right at the end of the Xbox One's life cycle, trying to convince people over when you can just have a fresh start. And I think Microsoft are definitely in a position to do that.
No, that does make sense. It would may also make sense from just from a getting a head start on the next development cycle. You know, that there's so much that you can get done if you really plan ahead. It's sort of like project managing. If you can allocate your resources ahead of time, put your planning in, and get all of those ducks in a row, it's like dominoes. When the time comes for, you know, you announce your console, your development things, this, that, and the other, all of that stuff, if you do it right, can be sorted out, be developing already months in advance, maybe even years, you know, if you really have your act together and everything organized. So there's absolutely a situation of where they can really get the head start on a lot of people if they basically get organized now.
Exactly. I think there's definitely room for improvement. I think they've identified what they need to do, and they're going to do that. The other thing which stood out to me is the fact that they actually had exclusives to show, which made me happy. Because even though they haven't released many exclusives, they do technically have a lot of brands under their belt. And firstly, they went with a title which fans have been waiting for. It's like Surefire Money. And that's Gears of War 5, as an exclusive, of course, coming out next year. And that's looking great. So, one, I think that's smart because, hey, you have a franchise that fans care about. You would be silly not to push that forward. Just make sure it's quality so fans actually want it. What I wasn't expecting, excluding Battletoads, which I'm so happy about. I know,
it's so good.
Battletoads is the best, and just the fact that they're even willing to give it another shot is awesome. But what surprised me was their next announcement, and a game which I did not think I would care about. So it's called Gears Tactics. And I mentioned Gears of War 5 just before. So Gears Tactics, the Gears bit should be a bit of a hint, is a spin-off new series which is coming out of the Gears of War. And basically it's what happens when XCOM fans want it to be a Gears of War game. It's strategic, it's tactical, it's bird's eye view looking down, and it looks amazing. The graphics on it and just the gameplay elements I saw looked really fun. It was such a mind-blowing experience. I've never thought I would see something like that and get excited, because I'm not a Gears of War fan. I can respect it's a good series and has a legion of fans, but I never got into it. And yet I saw this Gears Tactics, and I am all for it, 100%.
Okay. So for those of you who don't know the history of Tactics games, calling the game like Tactics has a really big connotation for this sort of isometric tactical RPG fan, because there are several games, including the XCOM games, which go back into the early 90s, where you basically, there's like a grid across the map, okay? Whether it's sprite-based or if it's done in 3D graphics, you have individual characters, and it, depending on the tradition of tactics games, like for example in Gears of War, in XCOM, they are basically generic units, and they gain levels as they, kill enemies and make it through missions. Versus in the Japanese tradition, where you have a series of basically PC characters who have, names, general classes that they stick with, or stories, or things like that. So, say for example, you might have like a soldier class or an assault soldier class. Marcus Fenix might be the soldier class versus Dom, who is the assault soldier class. And one might use short range weapons, one might use sniper rifles, one might just use regular machine guns. And you have certain amounts of actions, yeah, and certain amount of points that your character can have to do so many actions. So there's different traditions of tactics games. Normally, when you call a game something tactics, it refers to the Japanese tradition. So that's definitely something that the Gears of War developers would have taken into account when they called it Gears Tactics, because that tells you straight away the kind of game this is going to be. So that's real exciting.
It is definitely self-explanatory. And to break that down just to a more simpler term, how can I put this? So with these tactic games, for someone who hasn't played XCOM or any of these other strategies, just think of Pokemon, where it's turn-based. You choose your attack. You try to figure out the best attack for the situation. Should you retreat? Should you heal? Should you use the weaker attack but it has a long-term effect? Should you do more of an area damage if you're against more than one Pokemon? That's how the XCOM series was. And this is how Gears of War will be. So when you're controlling your troops, the enemy, like chess as well, they'll take their turn, they'll do their moves, they'll try to do damage, and then it's your turn. You need to predict what their next move will be and how you can take advantage of that, such as setting up counterattacks, which is very popular in this genre of gaming. So a counterattack can be, you can have a troop stand in there, and they have a line of sight, so whatever they can see in front of them. And you can choose to not do anything that turn, but instead tell your troop, hey, if anyone runs in your line of sight, shoot them. And this may seem like a very pointless thing, because you'd think, all right, why don't you just go and attack? Well, what if you have three people with the same line of sight? You hide behind boulders or rocks or bricks or walls or whatever, and the enemy tries to attack you, and that poor sucker goes into the line of sight of three troops. All of them will shoot him all at the same time. So, yeah, I think that a Gears of War game in it, didn't know I wanted it until I saw it, and now it suddenly makes sense. Sort of like the last XCOM 2. Clone wannabe, which was the Mario plus Rabbids game that came to the Switch. No one wanted it. Everyone thought it was weird. When I heard the rumors, I thought people had lost their minds, because I was like, yeah, sure. Mixing Nintendo characters with Rabbids and basing that off a realistic strategic shooting game, sure. let's just call it a day and go crazy. And yet I watch my partner play that game all the time. And it's great. It's actually the reason why I played XCOM 2 in the first place. Because I watched her play this weird game that shouldn't exist, and it does, and it's brilliant. And I thought to myself, huh, this is based off XCOM 2, huh? Or XCOM series. I'll check out XCOM.
Yeah.
And hopefully the same thing would happen with this. Like, people will play Gears Tactics and think this is great. And then they'll ask, should I buy XCOM? And yes, yes. It's an immediate yes, go do it. In case you remember this in like a year's time when the game launches.
Yeah. But this is how you create demand, yeah? Like, people don't know they want something until you create it. It's like how people, you know, people didn't know they needed a Minecraft thing until some nutcase created one, and now people go nuts for it. It's just one of those things.
It is, it is. Before we started this recording, you actually mentioned to me there was a game which we haven't mentioned yet that was shown at the Microsoft conference, and it sounded really interesting. You want to remind me and tell me what it is you were saying?
Cyberpunk 2077.
Oh, there
this,
it is.
Okay, I've been wanting to talk about this and what they did in the conference for this because, okay, here is how a company that is... Okay, so at the end of the conference, if you haven't seen the footage, so the Xbox guy is doing his little speech and he's about to... And he's got this big smile on his face, so the whole... People watching the stream and in the audience are going, oh my god, they're about to do something awesome. Something awesome's about to happen. And he starts doing his thing and then basically all of the set decorations on the stage basically start flickering and all the lights are going flickering and all the lights start going out and people are going, oh my god, what's happening, what's happening, what's happening? And then everything starts turning red. And... You think you see the color red and you're like, what is it? And then the screen comes up with an old style DOS loading screen, and the second you knew straight away, this was Cyberpunk 2077, because a good brand leverages simple ways of communicating with people. Everyone had so much anticipation for this game, and the second they saw all the red lights come up, everything, all the Xbox logos turned red, everything just went red. And so people knew straight away, this is CD Projekt Red doing their thing. This is Cyberpunk 2077. And then they showed this amazing I don't know if it was a gameplay trailer or just like a cinematic trailer, because we haven't seen the gameplay, so we don't really know.
Yeah, it was just a cinematic they showed, but even that alone was enough to get us excited, wasn't it?
Yeah, and it was basically this intro into this world. You know when we were talking about with trailers showing you what kind of game you're going to be playing? This was a narrated trailer of someone telling you about the environment that the game is set in, to that was set to like various images showing the cyberpunk world, where sometimes you saw, you know, criminals, you know, some guy lying on the ground getting the absolute crap kicked out of him, someone trying to break into a store, and the other guy pulling out a shotgun. You know, one was like this guy with all his cybernetic implants on this train getting electrocuted by the things going into his head. So there's all of this stuff showing you where what this game is going to be about, so that when the actual game comes out, or before the game comes out, and by the end of this trailer, you know what kind of game you're going to be playing. So
I think they did a great job setting it up, gathering the interest, and the only downfall is the developers since then have actually say that, hey, we're glad everyone's interested, it is going to be amazing, and we're obviously working very hard on it, but it's not a title which we're going to see anytime soon. They've actually referred to the stage of development that they're in to be like pre-alpha, like very, very early. Like, we pretty much didn't see anything because they didn't feel comfortable enough to show it and put it out there, and they didn't want to build the expectations, because hype only lasts for so long. Obviously, fans will be waiting, myself included, until it does come out, and whether that's in a year's time, whether that's in 3 years' time, we will still be interested. But I have experienced it before, and I'm sure you have as well, Jamel, where they've shown too much of a game too soon, and then they weren't able to show anything for so long that by the time it did launch, you're like, oh, I thought it had already launched. Like, it was just so off your radar. Anyone that's been behind the scenes, though, so they did actually show proper gameplay. Yeah. And everyone, even though they're not allowed to give any specifics, anyone and everyone that walked away from it was just blown away. It was just an unanimous yes. This game looks amazing. We're not legally allowed to say anything, but it's good. Yeah.
It's exciting because it just sort of it sets the anticipation. So that's always a good thing. If we can land people on that hook and set up that brand, when that comes out, if they make sure that they time everything right and get organized, it'll be real good. Hopefully they don't run into a Final Fantasy VII remake situation of where people are sitting there throwing their hands up going, like, what the hell's going on? Which wouldn't be good after all of this excitement that they've generated. That would be a shame if that happened.
Yeah, it's funny that you mentioned that, Ashley, because the developer, one of the head guys behind Final Fantasy VII, have actually openly said that they sort of regret showing what they have shown. Because the reason why we didn't get anything more at E3 was because they showed it too early. And a title which you and me have discussed and we're both very excited about made that same mistake as well. I'm actually referring to Resident Evil 2. When they revealed, before this E3, when they revealed, hey, we're working on a Resident Evil 2 remake, they were just so excited and pumped at the fact that they were finally going to work on what fans have been waiting for that they announced it to the world pretty much the moment they got the green light. And we had to wait 3 years before they were able to show anything because they literally didn't even have a game built yet. They did it just a little bit too early, and so they lost a lot of momentum. Thankfully, what they showed at E3 was so exciting that everyone's just going, whoa, they just lost it. And most of those people was me because I lost it and I immediately wrote a game article and then I lost it with other people I've never met. And I'm like, join my Facebook group so we can lose it some more. So I didn't help the losing it at all. But during that 3-year transition, I remember I was stalking the internet. I was looking up all the information and I'm like, what's even happened to this game? And if the trailer they showed us wasn't mind-blowing, I wouldn't have given it so much attention. Because I was already, like, a little burnt out. I'm like, yeah, you're working on it, apparently.
Yeah.
Like, you're even going to show us anything. So, yeah, timing is important. And a lot of companies, before launch, they go pretty hard, like, 4 to 3 months before. So they can build up that momentum, reach its peak, and then sell it. Whereas right now, even if CD Projekt Red released an interesting game fact about Cyberpunk 2077, even if they release something every week or every month, by the time the game launches, because they've made it pretty clear, it's at least a couple years away still, at least, possibly more, you lose a bit of interest. You don't want to be waiting and talking about a game for years. It's one thing to know it's in the background. You're like, yeah, eventually that's going to become a bit more closer to the release date. So in my opinion, I think it's actually better they're quiet about it for a bit now. Get some work. But then when they do reveal anything, slowly release some information. Like, you don't want it to just suddenly appear out of nowhere. You don't want some bunch of gameplay videos to come out and then the team is, yep, we're releasing this in 2 weeks or in a month. You're like, what? No, I'm not ready. I want the hype. I want to build it, but it's just such a balance. It's hard. You see some developers smash and do a great job, and you see others where you're just like, just release the game already. I don't even care anymore.
Yeah, it's going to be interesting when you look at the comparing Resident Evil 2 remake, Final Fantasy 7 remake, and Cyberpunk 2077. I feel like that's going to be a theme going forward for a while, and I get the feeling that Resident Evil 2 Remake is a lot further along than either of the other two games. So it's slightly unfair. But it's going to be very interesting and very telling, I feel, for the future of gaming, depending on how those games go, in particular Resident Evil 2 Remake, because it seems to be so much further along. And even situations with where we're seeing Battletoads Remake, or Battletoads Sequel, or whatever the hell it is, Battletoads, you know, just the hype, the excitement that people got from seeing a beloved title coming back, because there are a lot of potent brands out there that haven't been developed for a long time, and it's going to be interesting to see what kind of stuff will crawl out of the woodwork if games like that do really well and are supported by the fans out there. So that is very telling, I feel. It's gonna determine a lot of the future of gaming for the next couple of years. So keep an eye on that.
Definitely. I think they do need to capitalize on hype. These days, a successful marketing campaign, as far as I'm concerned, is when you release a gameplay trailer and everyone's talking about it, everyone's excited, you want a steady stream of information slowly coming out, maintaining interest, and then a release date which people know aren't too far along. So a lot of games, even outside of Microsoft, a lot of games which were shown, majority of them actually, are coming out in 2019. So then that can control your hype level, because you know, all right, look, we're already halfway through this year, so within 6 months we're going to slowly start getting the other games. And I think that's the best way to go about it. Ghost of Tsushima was shown at this year's E3. Can't remember if it was a Microsoft conference or not, but that game is very much, it tickles the nostalgia bones if you were a Tenchu fan, which was a Ninja series which came out during the PlayStation 1 days, and there was a follow-up on the PlayStation 2. It fell from fame, but it is remembered very fondly from fans, and we haven't really had an appropriate replacement. Now, the reason why I bring up Ghost of Tsushima is the fact that they brought it up, so they let us know it exists, they showed us some great gameplay, and we know it's coming out next year. That does a lot. That means between now and then they can release information, they can tease us more, and we mentally can keep ourselves in a state of excitement until it comes out. I can keep myself busy with this. But if it was coming out in 2020, 2021, or they simply didn't have a date for me, that doesn't really... How do you get excited about something you have no idea when it's coming?
Yeah, it's one of those things of where good marketing can make or break a game.
It can. And hopefully Microsoft follows that rule well themselves, because they have their exclusives. They even revealed another Forza. Forza Horizon 4, sorry. That's coming out in October. See, that is brilliant. That's not far at all. That is very soon. So I don't feel fans need a long time to get excited for something, because you've already enjoyed the previous games. You know what to expect. 2-3 months is more than enough time to hype some fans up over the next follow-up, and Forza has a great reputation. Whereas Gears Tactics, for example, that's a new IP. It's using the name Gears, but it's a new IP. They need time to build that up. So hopefully they can do that, and this doesn't end up being one of those quiet gems where it releases, it's actually a good game, it actually gets good reviews, but most people don't even know about it. That would be a shame. All right, Jamel, so this has been a lot of fun, but I think it's finally time to wrap things up. I would like to once again, as always, thank you so much for being on my humble podcast. Your insightfulness is always very vigorous and entertaining. So thank you.
It's very kind of you to say. And thank you, everyone, for listening. And I hope you log into Positive Gaming Space and tell us what you think of this episode.
Exactly. These are the backbone of what we do here. And we always appreciate it. So until next time, thank you for listening. Happy gaming. And go play a game. Have a shower. Eat some cake.
Try to eat some vegetables too. Those are important. And look at the sun. If you're looking at the sun's looking at you, and your body will thank you for it.
It's true. Or have a carrot cake, because then you're getting sweet, and you're sort of having a vegetable.
That's...
I'm a horrible influence. Don't listen. Outside of gaming, don't listen
to me. Do some yoga. Meditate on the meaning of life.
That's it. Before we make any ears bleed, I'm pressing the hang up button. I'm going to end this. This is what happens when we do a recording late.
Okay.
Now I can't even find the hang up button.
Don't hang up on me. Stop the recording. Don't hang up on me.
No. This podcast. Okay.
Guys.
It is ending.
Goodbye. Take care. Love you.
Bye.